Blog Talk Radio.
Great Friday, and welcome to Your Health is Your Wealth. My name is Kimberly Silas. Of course, I am your host on today's segment, this marvelous and beautiful August 17th of 2018. We are so incredibly appreciative, for there shall another be another beautiful August 17th of 2018. I'm so excited. I'm tongue-tied. I have just received full confirmation that we have two awesome and amazing, beautiful guest hosts with us on today. And as we do on every Friday, I would like to go into our moment of meditation. And today we are reading, I Plant a Seed of Prosperity. I plant seeds of prosperity as my willingness to see and hear the truth of my being develops. I declare that there is good in every area of my life. I am willing to stand firm on the truth with principles I have accepted. I choose to live in harmony with the universal principles that govern my success and prosperity. I choose to plant seeds that will grow into a fruitful harvest in due season. I plant seeds of prosperity deep in the soil of my mind. Prosperous living is my beautiful harvest. I give thanks for the good that I have right now. My gratitude creates an increase, and I am open to receive more. More love, more joy, and more peace are given to me freely. I am generously and gratefully given, and I receive. I thank you for the will in me, through me, as me, around me, and through the Christ within, and so it is. And that comes from Zechariah 8:12. For the seed shall be prosperous, the vine shall give its fruit, and the ground shall yield its increase, and the heavens shall give their due. And I will cause the remnant of his people to possess all these things. What a beautiful, beautiful morning meditation. Listen, you guys, I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking on today because you know I can get quite lengthy. I just want to reaffirm the fact that at the beginning of the month, we readdressed the mental health month, August being a continuation for Mental Health Awareness Month. And we have been so gifted and blessed that on today we have not only our return guest, Dr. Kelly Zimmerman of South Carolina, but we have been blessed to have Dr. Kia Everett come in with us today. So I am going to introduce both Dr. Kia Everett to the line. Welcome back. Welcome, Dr. Everett.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
We are so incredibly gifted and blessed to have you with us today. I also want to bring in Dr. Kelly Zimmerman. Dr. Zimmerman, welcome back.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Hi, Dr. Everett. It's an honor to be on the platform with you.
Yes. Hi, Dr. Zimmerman. How are you?
I am doing fine. Thank you for asking.
You know, you guys, Dr. Zimmerman, you spoke of being honored to have you be on the same platform. I'm so tickled. I have just lost my whole complete format. I don't know where to begin. Absolutely. And Dr. Zimmerman, you mentioned something to me during the month of May, during Mental Health Awareness Month, how culturally we live in taboo as African Americans about the importance of maintaining a consistent, healthy mindset. And I remembered you spoke on countertransference. Can you elaborate again on countertransference?
Well, when we talk about countertransference, we're talking about how we relay our own experiences, our own emotions based on those experiences on other people, because they may resemble that of those same experiences. Excuse me, I'm about as tongue-tied as you were earlier. But because of that, we often behave or respond back to them because they may resemble that. For example, if I see a dog, I may go back to my childhood and remember a dog may have nipped me on the heel. And I may have a fear or phobia of every dog. So every dog I see, I may not respond as kindly to dogs. I may not like dogs. I may not want to be around dogs. So if I take it to a human perspective, unfortunately, some people may engage into a topic like racism. They may not like a culture based on an experience that they may have had in the past because of that particular culture may have, somebody in that particular culture may have mistreated them, may have done some harm or something of that nature. It may have been a traumatic experience because of that. So in therapy, as a therapist, I may have had a experience because of that. A client may come into my office, and because I have not handled that in my own experience, in my own life situation, I may not give that individual the quality of care because I have not taken care of that issue myself. And because I didn't, I have done harm. I have failed to apply the ethical standards of duty to avoid harm, if you will, and not give that client the quality of care.
Exactly. I certainly appreciate that, Dr. Zimmerman. I am myself not a mental health professional, but I took that information to heart. Counter-transference just really hit home for me, because we are subject to transfer our beliefs onto what we, onto other people as a result of our own personal experiences. And I thought that that would be so important and accountable on my part to be really mindful of what am I transferring to my counterparts and colleagues. So I certainly appreciate you for that. Dr. Everett, thank you again for coming on. Can you share with us your insight?
Sure. I actually agree 100% with Dr. Zimmerman. I actually was thinking of another example, which is classic. A lot of times when you're dealing with people who have had sexual violation or sexual abuse and they are providing therapy for someone else that has come to see them that has been raped, molested, or any other type of sexual violation, and if they really have not done because with that type of therapeutic intervention, you really need some intense work. You need to really, you know, get to a place which I call is gut level, and a lot of times people don't like to do that. And so if you have not, as a therapist, done the extensive work that it takes for you to be able to provide therapy to individual that's coming to see you, that could potentially be I'm tongue-tied as well. That could be potentially a very catastrophic situation, because you're traumatized, and because you haven't dealt with your trauma, now you're doing therapy from a traumatic place, which you know, definitely is not a good therapeutic place to be.
Exactly.
Wow. That, you know, that is so incredibly powerful, and it's true. It's just absolutely true. We have to first address our issues before we can, to be mindful as to not impart or deposit that those beliefs and encounters onto other people. And I know we spoke, Dr. Zimmerman, about suppressing childhood issues and that they are reoccurring and they are reoccurring in progressive aspects of mental health. And I said, oh, my God, how important it is to know this, because we feel as though, or I'm going to say, I feel as though I have handled so many of my childhood issues to the point where I have progressed to a healthy state of consciousness. But something can come up, and it angers me and frustrates me all over again. And when you brought that to my attention, I said, that is what is considered a reoccurring and progressive aspect of the mental health diagnosis. You know, once you've experienced some level of violation or abuse of some sort, you may have moved through it to a degree that you are productive and a properly functioning adult. But what are those things that are able to trigger you back into frustration, self-pity, sadness, overwhelming defeat? It is a constant and ongoing matter of maintaining mental health stability. So I just think all of this dialogue and content is so incredibly important. And we talked about it being taboo in the African American community, but can either of you address how we have attempted to approach this inside the body of the church?
Sure. This is Dr. Everett. That's one of the things that I've been doing over the past year and a half or so, is really going in as a pastor myself, and just seeing how the church is not really addressing mental health as those of us who are in the field know mental health to be. So, for example, we may say somebody that's defiant at the church. We may say that they are dealing with, they have a Jezebel spirit. Well, in the church, that's what we would call it. But in the mental health field, we may say they have oppositional defiant disorder. However, as a therapist, I would deal with it as such. But as a pastor, if I don't know and I'm not aware of the mental health processes, I'm going to say, oh, they have a Jezebel spirit, and that's how I'm going to classify them. Which, if you're dealing with someone that also has abandonment or isolation issues, I've just isolated them again. Just put them in a position where now they don't feel safe to come to the church. And so one of the things that I feel we need to do in the body of Christ is we need to learn how to marry the two. And we need to learn that some of these things that we see that we've been calling or putting religious titles on is mental health, and we need to have these people treated because, the question becomes, are we neglectful as pastors and leaders if we just continue to ignore that the people who are in our congregations really are sick?
Absolutely. You know what, Dr. Everett, you said something that is so incredibly true. We treat things in as an example under the Jezebel spirit when you said that that's an oppositional defiance disorder. Being a clinical professional, you're able to immediately identify that things of the spirit actually are on the same in the physical. So although spiritually she's dealing with one aspect of mental health, physically we have a name for it. And it is treatable. I recently encountered an individual who repeatedly exhibited some very adverse behaviors. And my spirit told me that she is in pain. Hurt people hurt people. So I'm not able to clinically categorize what her issues are, but immediately my spirit told me that it's not going to help her to strike back because she's in pain for whatever reason. And that was just awesome. I think we are neglectful because we look at mental health as though it is an isolated issue. But Dr. Zimmerman and I discussed previously that if either of us were to come down with a cold on today, we would say, oh, yeah, Kimberly caught a cold. She's not feeling well today. But if I were to say I'm having a mental health setback, the taboo and the stigma of mental health issues come about that that's an isolated incident. She's a rarity that has mental health issues, but we are all subject to mental health issues, whether it be brought about by lack of hydration, lack of nutrition, lack of rest, you know, overwhelming levels of accountability and responsibility, it will wear out the physical temple. And the mind is the greatest aspect of the physical temple. So I think that we have all been somewhat neglectful in recognizing and acknowledging the importance of maintaining a consistent mental health, and that when it happens to those around us, that we need to approach it with a little more loving tenderness than to stigmatize them repeatedly by placing labels and blame. So that is just awesome.
And if I may add, because I really enjoyed what Dr. just said, because that's one of the things that I have been trying to admonish to the clergy in my area as well, that we have to be more insightful and marry the two, as I love the way she said that, into the faith-based community, because you've got to understand that there is a correlation, and in order to appropriately correlate and treat the two, and appropriately treat the two, you have to be knowledgeable. One of the things that in my in the Reformation that I'm a part of, we've incorporated a segment where church leaders, not just pastors, but church leaders, can get some understanding of the mental health profession. Because also, while the pastors and leaders are not gaining the awareness, they're, because of the lack of self-care, are also falling into the mental health arena, because statistics are showing that there's a high level of suicide rate among pastors. And so we also want to have them understand that it's not taboo also among leaders, that you have to understand when to get the appropriate mental health care for yourself, and that also when to refer. I know I just threw a couple of other topics in there, but it's also important how to refer, how to recognize certain things, and not just say, oh, it's just a demon. It's not Jezebel. It's not Delilah. It's not, you know, all of the other different spirits. But also just knowing how to appropriately give the appropriate counseling, and how to make the appropriate referrals, and how to identify. Because also you have to look at, pastors have to realize that you have qualified counselors within your congregation, and they may be or other social workers that can refer or counsel that client and give the quality of care. But also that pastor may need to get the quality of counseling as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if I can interject really quickly, in 2017, my brother, one of my best friends ever in life, passed away of a undiagnosed heart disease. It was instant. And I think I shared this with you before, Dr. Zimmerman, but my grief was so overwhelming that I was angry with God. And I continued to go to church, and I praised in the physical, because I knew, or I prayed, that my grief would pass, or at least it would get better over time. But a year later, it just had not gotten any better, and I was just so overwhelmed. And I remember my bishop one Sunday morning spoke on mental health, and she said that it is okay if we are having issues that aren't being addressed in the church. She strongly recommends getting counseling. and she mentioned grief counseling, and she gave the name of an agency. And it was in that moment that I had my breakthrough, because I was sitting in church week after week feeling as though I was a misfit and that I just couldn't get past this. And spiritually, I was lacking. But it wasn't that I didn't love or have faith. It was just that my mental what needed addressing. I needed grief counseling. I needed that to be addressed. And I know Dr. Everett mentioned that oppositional defiance disorder. As a pastor, do you find it difficult to address your members with making those suggestions? Is it challenging, or do you find that it's not a topic easily addressed?
Well, for me, as a pastor, it's not challenging because that's what my background in the natural is in. So, I'm able to address it head on. However, I do know that it is a challenge in the church for pastors who don't have the same background. So it definitely is a challenge, especially if a pastor themselves really doesn't understand the mental health process. It was something that Dr. Zimmerman said that I also say all the time, is that a lot of times pastors are also pastoring and leading from a hurt place. And so when they have not been healed, you know, I often tell pastors when I go out to do the training and I talk to the leadership and I say, you know, when we have leaders that are controlled, you know, and we're easy to say, control is a form of witchcraft. And we know that from the Bible standpoint. But why is that leader controlling? Why are they so gung-ho to have the control? Why would they demean the people at the cost of having control? Well, let's look back, you know, as a child, were they the child that was the one that was left out? Were they the child that was always made to feel like they didn't measure up? So now that they are in a position of control, they are able to, they're going to control it, and they're going to control it even if it hurts you. Not because they necessarily want to, but they've already vowed to themselves that nobody's going to make them feel inferior. So subconsciously, because they haven't worked on that, they haven't done the work. One, because the church historically, like you said, has never given us permission to get the help that we need when it comes to our mental health. When it comes to the physical, you know, we can go sit at the doctor's, we can go be in the hospital, we can do all of those things. The people come, they bring food, they make sure you're okay, you're taking your medicine, blah, 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 blah. But when it comes to the mental health, we just tend to, you know, say something like, okay, God will provide, you know, somebody, like you said, yourself was in the middle of really being in grief, you know, it's, oh, come on, get back in ministry, get back on your post. No, you need the same way you would take that time if you had a baby is the same way you need to take that time if you have a loss.
Oh,
and we just, and pastors, a lot of times, and I just say it's because we didn't know. You know, we are doing what we were taught to do. And so this is one of the goals of, I appreciate this platform that you're providing. This is one of the goals to bring mental health awareness to the body of Christ and say, listen, y'all, you know, now that we know better, we have to do better. One of the reasons we're having such a high rate of suicide is because we're not taking the time to deal with people's mental health, the depression, the frustration, the grief, and all of those things that people are dealing with on a daily basis. We keep sweeping it under the rug, saying God will take care of them, and we already know that. We know God is going to take care of them. However, now they have to learn, you know, we're in the world, and so we're not of the world, so that just means we don't handle it the same way the world does, but that doesn't mean we're exempt from the problems that the world has.
Absolutely. Exactly. And you know, that's part of that taboo, Dr. Everett, that's part of the taboo that if it's not being addressed or corrected in the church, that is something wrong with us. And you hit it on the head when you said that leading from a hurt place, how many of our leaders are leading from a hurt place and dealing with it on the basis of witchcraft versus a legitimate mental health issue? And I was like, oh, my word, when a woman has a baby, we are so mindful that she needs to recoup, recover, and be restored. We don't have a problem understanding that, grasping that understanding. But when you have a mental health breakdown, you know, it's like snap out of it, get yourself together. You know, this is witchcraft. This is not of God. But when in reality we are physical creatures that need help. And I just think the mental aspect of it is probably the most crucial. I had someone explain to me the other day that the head tells the body everything to do. It tells you when to blink. Absolutely. It tells you when to sneeze. It tells you when to turn to the left. It tells you when to turn to the right. It tells you everything. So it is paramount that we keep our minds in pristine condition. At all costs, we got to keep our mind in right perspective. And I am just an advocate for mental health. I really, really, really just love the two of you so incredibly much, not only for coming on to the show, I just feel so honored to have you up to share this platform with me, but to know that in this walk that we have such powerful leadership for people not only shedding imparting their knowledge on us from a spiritual perspective, but sharing it from a professional and clinical perspective. And it just means everything, not only for me, but for our listeners as well. In closing, of course, this is the end of the month of August segment where we study, where we're focusing on mental health. And, of course, we meet during the month, I believe it is, of May. I would love to have you back on again. But as we leave today, is there something in particular you would like to leave our listeners with that will help us carry on throughout the remainder of the year?
Well, for me, first of all, I just would like to say thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm honored to be on the platform with both of you ladies. And I just encourage you to continue bringing mental health awareness to the body of Christ because it's needed. And if we're going to, you know, dispel the stigmas, we have to do it.
I would like to say thank you all for talking about the mental health arena. This has to be something that we constantly make aware. I'm honored to be on the platform with Dr. Everett and, of course, you as well. We have to continue to spread this out, especially in our communities and the faith communities. The more we continue to talk about this, the more people will become aware and be proactive.
Well, thank you, thank you, thank you so much. You guys have been awesome. And for me personally, I would like to say that being outside of the clergy, I speak with my friends and my colleagues about the importance of just reaching it from a realistic perspective. If you get a cold, the first thing you're going to do is run to Walgreens and get some cold remedy. If you feel yourself overwhelmed, do not be afraid to either say to yourself or go to God in prayer, or whether you're sitting with a close family member or friend, I need to step back and get some rest. Quite often it can be treated with just rest, nutrition, and hydration. If that does not work, I strongly recommend that you seek out the guidance of a mental health professional. Until we meet again, my loving and beautiful friends and family, please take care of yourself. Your health is your wealth. Again, my name is Kimberly Silas, and I've got an awesome and amazing day. Until we meet again, be blessed.